Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I might be doing a lot of Al Pacino as a Puerto Rican guy voice in this.
My Puerto Rican ass got sent to the slammer one last time.
I would cut that, but I feel like, Tom, you should include that. That should just come in hard with that. And I'm going to do the spoiler warning now. If you have not seen Carlito's Way, genuinely, you know, I reckon watch it before you listen to this podcast. This is your official spoiler warning. We will spoil the movie and Avengers Endgame, so... We're going to spoil Avengers Endgame. Sorry.
They come back from the freaking snap. Sorry.
I mean, it's past the weekend. We're allowed to do it. Anyway, here you go. Here's the intro music. This is your spoiler warning.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg and a bucket of chicken.
Gonna put a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mission Zach's Leguizamo-rama, a podcast where each week my friend Zach and I chat about John Leguizamo and all the stuff that he has been in, and we've got a bloody doozy this week. I'm so excited. Well, we haven't done a big one in ages. It's been ER and fucking Papa John's commercials for the last fucking year. So I'm excited.
True. It's been dark days at Leguizamo-rama. We blew our load a little early.
Yeah, true. I'm Mish. You might remember me from the Papa John's episodes that we did a few months back. I'm joined as always by my friend Zach Ruane, who you might know from.
That Spanish language sort of rebate, pharmacy rebate ad he did.
With Jude Pearl. And we did the episode with Jude Pearl. Yeah. That was a nice one to give our friend Jude. we're not alone. If we're doing a bloody big film, we're going to bring in the big guns. And this week we're joined by friend of the pod. He's a comedian, a podcaster, film critic, a self-described cinephile.
Whoa.
And
the government called me that. I had to sign up to look at registry. The government put me as this is a guy. He's officially a cinephile.
What do you think? I think like
it's I didn't even say his name.
Oh yeah, intro.
People could be thinking I'm talking about bloody David. So yeah. We're joined by Alexi Toliopoulos to my bloody right.
My pleasure to be here, and the big guns have entered the building.
Big guns talking big movies.
Mm-hmm. That is my dream come true, to come here and talk about one of the hugest movies, the landmark in Mr. John Leguizamo's career.
Well, if you're a true Leguizamo-rama listener, you will know that from the start, well, the first time we had Alexi on, when in... Like, fairness, he probably should have dumped us and never spoken to us again after what we
He's
put
He's had
him
a couple of rough ones with us, and Shockers. We apologise for that.
Every time I go on the podcast, it begins with you guys apologising for getting me on to do Mario.
Because it ruined my life. I guess
it was the worst day of my life. And I've had some bad shit go down in my life.
Yeah. Zach and I are on a roller coaster.
So for those who don't remember,
================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================================================````└================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================
to watch the Morgan Jekyll cut of
the director's cut of Mario.
Well, not even the director's cut. It was the fan cut of director's footage.
The director's vision.
Yeah,
as told by the fans.
And now let's make it very clear: the movie itself goes for an hour and 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. This fan director's cut went for 2.5 hours, mm-hmm. but the version we watched went for 8 hours because it kept starting and stopping.
Turns out, people making illegal fan remakes of Mario Brothers don't have a lot of money for server space. Yeah. So,
but now you can buy that version on Blu-ray and DVD. So
get out of town.
We can all watch it again, no problem.
Well,
I've got the Blu-ray. Come over to my place. Chuck it on.
Is that legit?
Yeah, it's true.
You have it.
I've got it on Blu-ray now.
Alexi, we'll have to have you back.
Oh, good Lord. At least it shall not be as painful as last time.
But
I've watched that movie too much.
From the early days of Alexi being involved in this podcast, you said, I want to do Carlito's Way. Yeah. You can fuck me with this stupid Super Mario Brothers shit. You can have me on with a little bloody tiny recorded little itty bitty mic version of the menu, but I'm coming on for Carlito's Way.
He's like, yeah, get me Carlito.
Get me back for Carlito's Way.
Would you argue that this is your favorite John Leguizamo film?
I would argue it. I think so. I think this is my favorite. It's my favorite role of his.
Yeah.
But I would also say Carlito's Way, probably I've seen it at least 7 or 8 times in my life.
Yeah.
And I would probably say it's my favorite Brian De Palma movie.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's like in one of, maybe it's my favorite Al Pacino movie outside of like The Godfather and like Dog Day Afternoon, maybe. Serpico.
Okay.
Yeah, I really love this movie.
It's also,
I love this movie.
I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but I think it's worth you knowing, Alexi. Mm-hmm. It's also my mum's favorite John Leguizamo film.
Wow.
Yeah, so we had like VHS tapes, obviously, growing up, but there were only like a dozen of them. Three of them belonged to my sister and
you
I.
You might have had Laserdisc, it's not obvious. You might have had some little Super 8.
My sister and I had Annie the Musical, Labyrinth, and The Little Mermaid.
Oh, wonderful movies.
And my parents had like, you know, 10 others or whatever. And one of them was Carlito's Way.
Carlito's Way.
Wow.
They also had Dirty Dancing, Pulp Fiction, and Dances with Wolves, which was a double VHS.
Wow, this is a cinephile family that you're raised in.
That's exactly right. So it's my mum's favourite as well. So you're joining a really, really... you know.
Dare I say it.
Christine Club.
It's a little bit of a sexy movie.
It's a bit sexy.
And so mum likes it. It's a little bit sexy.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Like a little bit horny.
It's quite romantic. It's a romantic movie.
Should we just do this?
I think, look, this is very rare for us, Alexi. We often, we have, I think, records for longest podcast intro before we get to the movie, which I think has been bad for our numbers. But I said it to Mish. I feel like with when you got the big guns,
yeah, and we do have
when the guns are cocked. And
when
loaded.
You've got a when you've got a registered cinephile,
he literally can't live within 50 meters of a cinema.
No, well, I have to tell my neighbors when I move in. I gotta go. Listen, knock knock, mate. I love movies.
Lock up your DVDs. There's a cinephile in the neighborhood.
You better not be mentioning incorrect casting information around me because I'm going to have to correct you.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord.
Before we jump into the intro, though, we do have to go to an ad. But when we get back from the ad...
Is it too early for the ad? This is insane.
How far
to
into
me.
It is
don't
it?
They tell us like 10 minutes? It is insane.
Okay,
to me.
I actually...
If we're doing this before the ad...
All right, forget the ad. I have a question for Alexi. It's not Carlito's Way related.
Okay, and then that's
then good. Then we can jump in.
I mean, God, we might have just, we could have just had a good, a tight intro, but
yeah,
I think
whatever,
you're right, Mish.
Tom can edit this out, but I don't want to put him to too much work. He did say to me the other day, stop making me write songs for you. At the end of each podcast, I'm like, Tom, take us away with a song you've created about this film or whatever. And it takes him like half a day.
Wow.
Sorry, Tom.
If I was Tom, I would just cut that bit out where you say, can you write a song? I'm like, no. Sorry,
it was one of those things where I would try to hint. You know when you try to hint in the podcast? Mm-hmm. So you'd be like, you just do a look.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'd never think to after we start recording, then go, oh, Mish. It takes time. I've worked with Tom a long time. It actually takes him a long time to make those. It's like I only ever thought to do it subtly and with looks on mic.
It's a very, very selfish thing I do because I just enjoy them so much. Tom's outros are my favourite part of this podcast. Yeah.
And no one gets to the end of podcasts.
I have a question for both of you.
Okay.
Oh.
Big guns.
I'm a trainee cinephile. I've put in the
a cinephile in waiting.
Yeah, I've put in the documents.
Yeah.
But I need to get 10 referrals before I can join the club.
Fair. I'm going to refer to big guns first.
Okay.
But then we'll come to you, little knife.
Here we go. Let's loaded. Let's go.
Big guns and butter knife. Is there a movie?
Yes,
there's thousands, millions.
Oh, fuck off.
There are plenty of movies, and each one is more interesting than last.
Is there a really, really famous movie that...
Yeah, like,
that
like,
I went
in
right into
month.
It. You can't interrupt me. that you haven't seen that people would be like, oh my God, you haven't seen that? Oh, wow. Huge
film. Yes, there's plenty. Let me tell you one that was just mentioned moments ago. Dirty Dancing. Never seen Dirty Dancing.
Wow. You've never seen Dirty Dancing.
That's a good one to have not
seen.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, so about I will be seeing it fairly soon, I promise you.
Oh, good.
I'm trying. I tell you what I do. Every year, New Year's Day, my first movie of the year, this is a tradition for me. I will put on a movie that's like an iconic classic that I've never seen before.
Wow. Oh, I love
and
that.
That'll be like how I start the year. I always try to go watch something big and try and fill a big gap that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
Like this year I watched The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Wow.
Okay, yeah.
John Wayne, John Ford, Jimmy Stewart Weston.
Mm-hmm.
And the year before that, I can't remember. I saw Rashomon for the first time probably a few years ago doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So I try to do that every first day of every year, just try to do bang, big one.
That's a good to do it because those you've just named two of my ones probably. Rashomon and I don't think I've seen any John Ford films.
Oof.
I know that's great. Yeah. You know, and
that's a pang to my heart.
Oh,
that's surprising.
Westerns are a big thing for me that I haven't jumped into westerns.
My dad was American, so westerns were around a lot. Yeah. He loved them. He loved a John Wayne.
I love westerns. Every western I watch, I love, but I just haven't like.
You'll get to some shit once, pool. Mate. When you
have
start
you seen Have you
pool?
Seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's like a western.
Mm-hmm. That's it a western, is. That's like yeah. I feel like I've seen more movies riffing on western than actual examples of the genre. If that makes sense.
You got to go back to the '40s to watch the real stuff.
Because even the spaghetti westerns were riffing on the genre.
They're all like reformist westerns and revisionist westerns and stuff.
Speaking of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, because my mum's made such a feature in this podcast already, my mum wanted to fuck Robert Redford in that film so bad, but like every woman her age.
I thought we were about to say she wanted to fuck him so bad that she went to America in search of the fella.
Fucked him so bad. I've never seen a Star Wars film except for the one with the small boy.
Oh, okay. So The Phantom Menace.
Yep.
One of my favorites.
Saw that in the cinema. And I've never seen a Godfather film.
Interesting.
But I really want to.
I feel like I've talked about this a lot. I've never finished Godfather Part 2. That's my whole... And now it's almost like this thing for me. Like, I'm like... That's fucked to have not seen Godfather Part 2. Yeah. Like, that's fucked. But every time I've tried, I've started at like 11:30
p.m. Yeah, that's a problem. You got to do it, set up yourself like mini-series style. You go, I'm going to do this over a weekend. I'm going to watch one on a Friday night. Saturday, I'm going to put part one, part two on. You take the intermission to go live your life for a second.
Yeah.
You come back and you go, I'm going to finish this in the evening. And then you watch Godfather Coda on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Another one is Chris Pine. I don't think I've seen anything he's done.
You didn't even see the Dungeon and Dragon movie that your friends
your
are
friend
voicing?
Was in the Australian release of that film.
Well, you didn't. You could have invited me along to see it, but I didn't get to go. I would have gone to the premiere in LA with you if you'd taken me. But no, and so he's huge, and I've never really seen it because he's Captain America, isn't he?
No, that's Chris Evans.
That's the one I meant.
Oh, okay.
But you clearly also mean
Chris Pine as well. And Chris Pratt. I haven't seen a lot that he's done.
What about Parks and Recreation, the television program?
Never watched.
Wow, okay, interesting. Oh, wow.
Never watched. Anyway.
None of the Chris's. I think Chris Pine is the most, is the best of them.
I go Chris Messina, but I'm an indie guy.
Yeah. He doesn't count.
He's one of the Chris's.
He's the Iron Chef Italian of Chris's.
Who's your favorite Chris?
Pine. Of the Chris's.
The Hollywood Chris's.
Of the Hollywood Chris's.
Is Chris Farley a Hollywood Chris?
No.
He's very funny.
We're talking Pine, Hemsworth, and what's his name from Captain America?
Pratt.
Oh,
I don't know enough about any of them to care. Anyway.
The only Chris I like is Chris Kringle.
Oh, that's cute.
Because he gives me present.
Yeah, that's nice.
All right, let's go to an ad break.
And when we come back, we'll...
the one film that you have seen. When we come back, we're going to be revealing one film we have seen.
Okay. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, we're back from the ad break, and I've seen The Matrix.
Cool. I've seen My Girl.
And I've seen both Matrix Reloaded and My Girl 2.
Did you like My Girl 2?
I did like
it. In many ways, I think it's better than the first.
Yes, and in many other ways, it's much worse.
Yeah.
I can't remember the plot of My Girl 2. What's the plot of My Girl 2?
She starts dating a guy, I think. A teenager.
Who's going to end up being her cousin-in-law or whatever.
Ah.
So she decides to write a report on her mum, who's dead. And so she goes to live in LA with her uncle and his, her uncle's new girlfriend and the girlfriend's son. Falls in love with the son. Oh, spoiler warning for My Girl 2, by the way. Falls in love with the son and then just travels around LA learning about her mum.
Great. Not enough fucked sequels these days.
That was a fucking fucked sequel because the movie was so, the first one was so iconic and they were like, well, let's just make a second one, which just isn't.
Yeah. It made me afraid of bees, that first movie.
Oh, yeah.
Who hasn't cried in that film?
I don't think I cried.
Oh, can I ask one more question before the, please?
Sure, Mitch.
What's the last movie that made you cry?
The one I watched last night.
Yeah, yeah, what was that?
Oh, no, I can't remember the name of it.
My Girl 2, the opening film.
The opening film of Melbourne
International Film Festival.
Thank you so much for coming. My Girl 2 could not have happened without the Melbourne International Film Festival Premiere Fund. When Emma, what's her name? Anna Schlumsky came to us with this brave and innovative idea of My Girl 2 set in the streets of Melbourne. We couldn't. Anyway, that was the last movie I cried
in.
I think
mine would have been something about a dog.
Did you cry in Barbie?
No.
God, I've been crying a lot in movies.
Did you cry in Barbie?
I cried in Barbie.
When?
At the end. When
they took the men down?
Yeah. When she fucking disrespected Ken like that.
Oh, I'm talking like Niagara Falls, mate.
Wow. Niagara Falls crying. Yeah. My one would be the Pedro Almodovar movie Parallel Mothers.
Oh.
That really killed me. I love that movie so much. Fair.
Oh, actually, I know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's The Survivor, the one we just watched recently.
Did that make you cry?
What's The Survivor?
It's a 2021 film.
This was one of those great examples of picking an actor is better than picking a director. Although people would pick this director as well.
Yeah, true. It's a movie, called The Survivor, about a survivor of Auschwitz called Harry Haft, who survived Auschwitz by doing boxing matches with other inmates to the death.
Good Lord.
But it's told, the story is told from his perspective post-war, becoming a boxer.
Whoa.
And with flashbacks to the concentration camp.
Wow, Rain Man himself, Barry Levinson, directed this movie.
Yeah.
It's technically a talent movie. I think it was for HBO, but it's very special.
Well, that's not
Hans
TV.
Hans Zimmer did the music for it.
HBO, no, it's box office at home.
I do like that Hans Zimmer. Okay.
One of the scenes in that, I shed a tear.
Wow.
So the movie is called Shader. I can't believe I watched the whole movie and I didn't pick up on the name. It's called Shader. And I cried.
Mm.
It was one of those movies where it's very, very subtle. And I was like, you know those movies where they really creep up on you? Where you're like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. It's very moving, but I don't know what's happening or what the point they're making. And then like the second to last scene, I was just like,
yeah.
Oh no! And then I was a plus one of a friend, and he was kind of at work because he works for cinemas and stuff, and he was there like being like, "Hey, how are you?"
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, thank you so much." And then there was like someone from Mad Men was there, and they're like, "Oh, did you enjoy the movie that we're releasing?" Because they were all in work mode, and I was like, "It was beautiful. It was so beautiful." So let's do a little description of Carlito's Way.
I'm so excited to discuss this with you, my friends.
Wow. God, we took 17 minutes.
Yeah.
God forbid we do a short intro.
Yeah. Now that's more Mission Zach. None of this 4-minute shit.
What was that? All right, let's do this. Let's talk about Carlito's Way. This is probably the worst intro I've ever done, so please fill in the gaps.
Oh, God, okay.
Carlito's Way is a 1993 gangster film. Hey, that's pretty good for an intro. Mm-hmm.
So far, so cool.
Directed by Brian De Palma. Well, that's relevant.
Actually accurate.
And written by David Koepp. I thought that was an interesting fact. Mm-hmm.
Do you know it's also based on a book by Edwin Torres, who was a judge?
I didn't know he was a judge. Well, this is what I thought. I thought, why write a good blurb when Alexi can really fill us in? That can be your first job, Alexi, is like, what should we fill people in? Carlito's Way. Goodness the sequel. Gracious me. Zach Ruin. Carlito's Well.
Oh, my God.
Do you know
God.
Why? It's because the next word is tells.
So I'm putting them together.
Carlito's Way tells.
The story of... Anyone want
to guess? Carlito Brigante.
I just said Carlito. Carlito Brigante.
I know his full name. Carlito Brigante.
And then I did an open bracket. What did I say next?
I reckon you put the actor's name.
And that is?
Alfredo James Pacino.
A New York gangster of Puerto Rican heritage but looks Italian and someone says that, who has just gotten out of prison after 5 years and wants to go legit. Mm. Unfortunately, while he was in prison, despite doing a lot of therapy, he didn't learn any assertive communication.
I've been rehabilitated, rejuvenated, now I'm re-assimilated.
So he can't say no, and he gets in more and more trouble. Johnny Legs is baby legs in this, and he plays a young, up-and-coming gangster who frequents the club that Carlito is running. He is only in a few scenes, but his character packs a wallop.
Wow.
Very good. I think the use of the word wallop instantly makes that blurb like at least a 6 out of 10.
I agree. Wallop is a wonderful word.
Wallop took it from a 4 to a 6.
Doesn't he pack a wallop?
He does.
He does pack a wallop. Can I start?
Mish, you have the floor.
You have the floor, Mish.
I want to start by saying when I watched this film.
Yes.
So I'd never seen, we've discussed, neither Zach or I had ever seen this film.
This was one of those big ones we hadn't seen.
Now, Zach literally knew nothing about the film. Wow. I knew some weird little tidbits about it, right? Mm-hmm. But that's it.
You'd cop the glimpse when your mother was watching the movie.
An itty bitty glimpse, right? I'd seen a titty, I'd seen a gunshot.
Yeah, just a flash of breast.
A breast and a gunshot. I knew that was in there.
Cop the glimpse of Al Pacino staring through a door with about to burst through.
Because he's saw titty.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we locked in this movie only 2 days ago or something like that, 3 days ago.
Well, because we had it in waiting. It was in our pocket. We were waiting for you to come to Melbourne. The lady in waiting.
And then Alexi's here in Melbourne, so we're like, well, we've got to watch it. Now, I've had a really busy few days.
Yeah.
So the only time I could watch this movie was this morning.
Same,
so
babe.
I watched Carlito's Way over breakfast while, like very tired. Mm-hmm. I was out very late last night with work, and I was so exhausted eating my toast and kiwi fruits watching Carlito's Way. And I would say not the ideal time to watch Carlito's Way. Carlito's Way is an 8:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
like post-dinner film. You've had your dinner. You sit down.
Yeah, you finish your dinner.
Because maybe
a block of chocolates is okay.
This was so full on. I've seen a lot of film in my life. And it was just because of the timing and the breakfast – I was just like, this is just a lot for me to take in. Very intense.
Mm. I love your owning of that. I feel like that's a big thing we do on this podcast, yeah. Alexi.
You own your viewership.
Because I think that's a context that's important.
I think so. Mm. Everyone should, at the start of every review, someone should be like, okay, here are the circumstances in which I viewed this.
I was in a
Allow
terrible
my
mood.
Biases to be displayed.
Yes. I think that's a great idea, quite genuinely. Every reviewer should do that. Just like, I had a fight with my wife before I stepped into the cinema. So I was thinking about that.
Well, also, I just wanted to make it very – we've talked previously about, like, we've watched movies and been like, if you're having dinner while watching this, what you should be eating when you're watching that movie, finish your dinner before you watch this film.
No food should be – not even a popped corn, I should say.
A Magnum. You could have a Magnum. You could have an ice cream cone.
I'd like that crack of the Magnum during this movie. It would be quite nice.
Yeah.
I think this is a movie where I want
Magnum
something
movie.
Like
Magnum
the movie, movie. I want to be eating something a little bit rich and a little bit naughty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alexi, this is a big one for you. You requested this. Mm-hmm. You said you would be willing to come back on this podcast that has put you through hell for this. Tell us why you love Carlito's Way.
Oh my, I actually don't even know where to start. Because I actually think this is truly, from the first time I saw it, this was an instant favorite, and then it has grown to be one of my true favorite movies. I actually prefer it to the other Brian De Palma, Al Pacino doing a Latino American accent gangster film. I think this is far superior to Scarface. Yeah. And I think what I love about this one, it is like, it's Brian De Palma's answer to pure cinema. And by pure cinema, I mean like the Alfred Hitchcockian sense of pure cinema of not just writing a movie with text and words and dialogue, but telling a movie and telling a story through the art of cinema of through camera, through sound. And I think De Palma has always subscribed to that kind of ideology in making films. But I think this film actually really beautifully presents it because he's someone that's so visual and creates like these really interesting visual montage, like, and also through like one shot, all this kind of visual technique to emotionally tell a story. And I think Carlito, the character, there's something about this character I think Brian De Palma really relates to artistically. So I remember reading he didn't really want to do this movie because he'd already...
De Palma,
he'd already explored this kind of stuff with Al Pacino very directly in Scarface. He's like, well, why would I want to do this again? And then I think he reads the script. And to me, as like a someone who... Brian De Palma is one of my fellas.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite grub auteurs. I think he's one of the great grubs of cinema. And what he...
A grub is right, actually.
He's a real grub. Yeah. He's got done a lot of grub flicks that are some of my favorite movies of all time. But I think... There's something about Carlito Brigante and like thinking about this movie again, you know, I said I wouldn't get a chance to watch it. It was just like, can we please do Carlito's Way? When you said, can you do the podcast? I'm like,
that's had you booked for Carlito's Way, man.
And I was like, okay, because I don't need to watch it. I'll be honest, confession, I watched it again.
Yeah,
I did. I watched it before I left the house to come down to Melbourne. Oh. No, yesterday. I watched it while I was doing, while I was working, but I was like, no, I just zoned back in.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What really caught me was... for the first time, this was something I noticed, was Brian De Palma, the way he like he stages scenes, he doesn't really talk about it too much, but it's something that you kind of can't help but notice is like he really captures a really powerful sense of geography of like how his scenes play out. And there's a scene early on in the movie where Carlito has gotten out of jail on a technicality. He gets out on technicality. He's not an innocent man. He gets out on technicality. I also love that scene where he's like, does this huge speech, like, I've been rehabilitated. I love it. It's so good. And then he goes with his cousin or whatever, and you immediately get this sense of him going like, you cannot break the life of crime. And I think that's what that's the theme I love about this movie, is like, you're in this world, you can't freaking get out of it. He goes with his cousins who go to this drug deal that is set up to go bad.
It's one of my favorite scenes in the whole film.
It's like masterful stuff on every level.
It's incredible. Yeah, sorry, please explain it.
And that performance by Pacino in that, where he's like, he knows what's going on.
But we know something's off. It's the incredible. We're literally in it with him. We're like, something's about to happen. Like everyone else in the room doesn't know what we and Carlito know.
And it's so amazing because it is, there is no obvious visual cue. There's the crack of the door, but there's very little.
You see that light flickering and stuff?
Yeah.
And then those shots to him with the red brick wall behind him. It's incredible.
There's very little, like, if it was theatre, talking about pure cinema, if that scene was theatre, there is nothing in the text that would convey to an audience that something is wrong. The only reason we're told something is wrong is through all of the cinematic technique. Yeah. Sorry, you were talking about geography.
And so that scene, it's like you said, it's pure cinema, like the way it's built up. But to me, seeing it this time around was... Carlito is playing in De Palma's, like, with De Palma's tools, because he is basically figuring out the geography of the scene, of going like, well, there's someone in that bathroom, there's someone here. And but while he's doing that, he's putting on this flamboyant performance of like playing like
a trick shot,
pool and stuff. And he's like owning the scene, he's using his charisma. But I think seeing this movie, it's like you see the Al Pacino character, Carlito Brigante, he's like a survivor. Every kind of decision that he's made has, at first, I think, been direct survival of, like, you know, self-defense and all that type of stuff. But then it goes from being survival to preempting
like self-defense, like, you know, to every kind of move is to survive. And you see that is like he plays geography the same way that Brian De Palma stages geography in his films. So to me, reading again, I was like, well, he probably was attracted to the romantic aspects of this film because I think the romantic aspect is like what makes this really beautiful.
And then
that character probably being someone that sees the world literally in a similar way that he does.
That's such a great take.
You should look into criticism.
Yeah. I hate to break it to you. I'm actually a very well-respected film critic as well as being a disrespected comedian.
I feel like they say it's good with a podcast to sort of hold off your judgment until the end, but I want to just sort of own this and say I watched it this morning as well.
What did you have for breakfast while you were?
I had a chicken sandwich, which is pretty crazy.
That's an interesting breakfast.
Yes. I am kind of off breakfast foods at the moment.
A lot of people say, what comes first, a chicken or the egg? In the case of this, the freaking chicken comes first.
Hey, which is quite untraditional for a breakfast.
It's funny that I feel shame that I had a chicken sandwich for breakfast.
Was it a 7-Eleven chicken sandwich?
No, it was a nice one. I made it. Yes, it was like leftover chicken.
Was it refrigerated sandwich?
The sandwich was not
refrigerated. Would you leave it on the counter, you dirty girl?
The chicken salad was refrigerated. Oh, okay. The bread was fresh.
So you made the sandwich.
Yeah.
This story keeps evolving.
But I watched it in the spare room.
Yep. Wow.
And I had the lights out and I really sort of, I went quite cinematic with it in the sense that I locked myself out of the phone and I turned out the lights and I watched it and I'm so glad I did. Here's what I'll say about it. I've never really gotten De Palma. I've never really gotten what he was going for. I've always felt like he was style over substance, which is a very overused concept and accusation. But I've always just sort of felt like there was stuff that was happening that was for the sake of it. This is the first time that I've gotten him to the level that I want to go back and rewatch his other films and reappraise.
Yeah.
Because everything you said is exactly how I felt. I think it's better than Scarface, 100%.
Absolutely.
Carrie?
I didn't like.
You don't like Carrie?
I like the first, the same as the book, I like the first half. I think that's a movie, that's a story that can never, I'm talking about Carrie now, but that's a story that can never truly meet the expectations of its build-up. It's all build, and then you're like, oh, yeah.
Wow. I disagree. I think that climax is the best shit ever.
He did a great job with it. I think I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to rewatch.
You're
going
to go back and you're going to change your mind.
I'm going to rewatch.
Yeah, because get used to singing a different tune, brother. That's all I'll say.
Because it just felt like this was the first time I'd really understood him using the tools in his toolkit to convey something. And not only that, I thought it was really interesting because if I were to describe the movie better than my intro, I were to say it's a movie about a gangster that gets out of prison and he's going to go clean, but he gets sucked back into it.
He's been rehabilitated. it's my favorite line read ever. Rehabilitated, reassimilated.
If I were to do that, you would hear that and you would go, oh my God, I've seen that movie a million, billion times. There's no way that this is special or interesting or a unique perspective. But it is the most human version of this story that I have ever seen. I really, really, really felt so much compassion for the character. I really felt like he wanted to get out and it was the world around him that wouldn't let him. And it just, I thought it was so beautiful. And I think there was something, I think we should talk about the romance because there's something about, you know, like, you meet this character. What was her name? You'd know her name.
Gail.
Who is the mum from Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's what I saw. I was like, that's who she bloody is.
Yeah, Penelope.
She's also in that Baldwin film.
The Shadow.
But you meet this character and it's like, I've met a million characters like this. I'm going to see an actress given not enough scenes, not enough lines and doing the best they can with it. And then to realize how much she's the heart of the film and how much his relationship with her is properly explored and properly given time.
Yeah.
I just was like so blown away with the heart of it. Mm. Like from De Palma.
Yeah.
A well-written, well-rounded female character from De Palma. Zachary Wayne, yeah. I got to give this guy a second shot. Don't worry, De Palma. It's going to be okay.
I'm coming
Zach
back.
Might get on board.
No, I'm completely on board with that. I thought that their relationship was really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
To the point where, and this is the big spoiler, at the end, when he dead, often with I find anyway, because gangster films, right? The film of the whole, the gangsters coming out and they're trying to redeem themselves, but they can't come enough. I want the world to know. They're not my favorite films, right? Yeah, and often the female characters in those films are some tits.
Careful,
and...
mate, careful, because you might say something that's never been said before.
What do you mean?
I'm just making a joke that you're about to say a very fair point.
That's
true.
They're often just not like well explored. No. They're often there to be boobs and a reason to make the man
and
angry.
Dare I say butts too?
Yeah, and bottoms. But mostly they're a reason for the male characters to be get mad about something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that she was so well developed, and so much so that at the end I didn't want him to die for her sake.
Exactly.
Like I was really invested in her life and where she was going. She preggers as, and she was like where her life was going, and it was just so sad to see how much his death has now stunted her life. Yeah,
I think those four primary performances in this movie of Pacino, Johnny Legs, Gail, Penelope Ann Miller, and Sean Penn as Kleinfeld.
Oh, here's a fun.
I think they are all like sublime.
I hope
perfect.
This. I hope
pitch perfect.
I would like to think that what I'm about to say will make you go, "Oh, yeah. Alexi," but I think you probably know it already. Sean Penn, Brian De Palma, and John Leguizamo back together again after Casualties of War.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So they all did. We've already done an episode of Casualties of War, which is an incredibly depressing film.
But actually, also great. I think I've
really
got
good.
This idea in my head of who De Palma is. That's
well,
because
he's
actually...
a grub hood, too. He's a grub. Can't help it. He's a grub.
Well, I love Carrie. I love Carrie. I think it's just like, it's iconic. Yeah. Like, I love the build. I think it's very similarly to Carlito's Way, but not at all. It's that we know something's about to happen. And it's the when's it happening. Yeah. And there are multiple times in this movie. Because, I mean, you literally see in the opening credits that he dies.
You're probably wondering how I got here.
Yeah, that one.
Let's go back and have a look.
Yeah. I love that.
I'm your Pacino.
But I love that. I tell you what. I love the fucking narration in this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's so
beautiful.
It's
like poetry, yeah.
It's like, lights out. Here comes the last train to wherever it's going.
Oh, there was a really...
I was like, I'm shaking now. She made me promise I wouldn't fill my boots with blood. And like, you know,
it's
I love
it's like
it.
Poetry. It's very romantic.
Beautiful.
Not I like there was a line.
Like it's there for a purpose. Mm. Yeah.
I'm going to fucking butcher it now. But there was a line in the narration that was like, her heart was too big to fit in this city or something.
Yeah.
Really beautiful line. I was just like, oh.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Do you know the scene that really surprised me that really like with their relationship was the one in the strip club? Was the one that
oh
it's
my
like,
God, it's so crazy.
That scene is great.
Yeah.
It's just, I've seen a scene like that.
I apologize.
Yeah. So basically, just if I think you should just watch it, but basically it's a scene where he finds out that she's an exotic dancer. Yeah. He goes to the club and you think he's going to, I mean, every Scorsese movie, he's going to go, he's going to be a prick about it. And it's going to be this long sort of back and forth scene.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I'm like, now that I'm getting on board with De Palma, I'm going to shit on Scorsese.
Fucking Scorsese.
You can't. It's like one and the other at the same amount.
But De Palma, it's just, I just was like, I know exactly how this scene is going to play out. And this is the writing. This is David Cope, did you say?
I don't know. I always say Cope.
I always thought it was Cope.
This scene.
Mr. Jurassic Park.
Every line I'm going to say. But the rest of the podcast.
But this scene
that
is one.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's so human, and they're both so interesting with how they approach. The way he just is like, he's a bit of a prick because it's in his nature, and then she confronts him in a way that's not like woo. It's like really direct and like, look, this isn't the ideal job, but like, are you telling me that? The way she said,
you killed someone.
Have you killed anyone?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's such a good point. And no one ever says this in these words.
Yeah.
But it's like, And then what does he say?
I apologize. I apologize.
But I also think it's like, I love that he's kind of thinking, he goes like, you know, yeah, he, like, it's a bit, basically he admits that he's wrong for like thinking this about her job and stuff.
Yeah.
And he like understands her. I think it's like, it's really cool, especially him where like, you know, her ambition is to dance. Like that's what she wants in her life, is to be a dancer. And she's found a career which is the only way she can express herself through physically, like the movement of her body, the rhythm of it. And like, even that's something that he loves. And when, as soon as he understands that, it's like beautiful. Because there's also that scene where you see her dancing at the club with this Italian
with that guy.
Yeah. And then like, you know, Sean Penn, Kleinfeld's like, it's like, he's touching her ass. I believe those are hips. Is that what he says?
That like, isn't an ass. Those are hips.
But the way that he's talking about it and like watching her, it's like you seeing him living because he can't dance like that. And you're seeing him like fall for his, like the person he cares about most in the world and loves her so deeply. And he's like, wow, he can see her like be alive in this.
And there's this thing as well, there's almost this expectation or understanding that the audience knows the genre tropes.
Yeah.
So that because we know how characters like this act, usually, we see when he chooses not to act like that, we're seeing someone fighting with themselves. Yeah. We're seeing this, like we're seeing him, we know what is in his nature because of the genre tropes. So we see that he's working to not be that way.
Yeah.
It's something like really the way it plays off our expectations. It's a very, very clever and good film.
It's a lovely motion picture.
It's
so good. I was just very, very impressed.
And also, I feel like Brian De Palma, this is the thing I want to, is that I think Brian De Palma always does one more take for fun. Let's see what we got. And he includes those takes. Yeah. And I love him for that as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a lot of what you're doing.
I love it. I love it. I get that little perfect little line reading there.
I can be a real prick when it comes to like dramas from the 70s, 80s, and some early 90s.
And new stuff.
When it's over 2 hours, I can often be like, come on now. Like, for example, a very good example is Raging Bull, right?
Yeah.
Great film. I just find it to be incredibly long.
Mm.
And that it's probably a reflection on what a piece of shit I am.
No, I don't think so. Because you like what you like.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
So when I was looking up, okay, what time do I have to wake up this morning so I can watch Carlito's Way before I podcast?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, it's 2.5 hours long. I'm going to fucking kill myself.
No,
oh
thank God you didn't.
I'm so glad I didn't kill myself.
Saved you.
Yeah.
Why did she do it?
Reinvigorated. It totally kept me for two. And that like for something that like the scenes were long and the chats were big, it was like, nah, I was in there. It was really fucking sick.
And
I
there were
that.
Scenes that were like not plot related, but it was a character study. So it felt like everything that was in there was there for the journey of it.
Absolutely.
And I think one thing that is, I think really interesting for me about this movie, because unlike you, I love gangster movies. It probably is like my favorite type of movie, or like when I want a genre, it's like gangsters what I gravitate
so
towards. And I think partly it was like my introduction to cinema, but partly it's like the first genre that fascinated me because one, I think they're migrant stories, and it's like the way to like cinematically tell a migrant story, because it's all about like that rise and that fall and it's an American genre, gangster movies. They're international obviously now, but it's like because it was an early cinematic genre that wasn't like as known elsewhere. It's like really happens in movies first that people, because it's so tied to like the 20th century and like industrialism and capitalism and stuff, that people, I think it's like, it's very cinematic genre. And it's like the first new genre of things happening that feels very cinematic. And so it's the first time you're seeing like those migrant stories being told in that way that are very, you know, cinematic or somewhat action oriented or whatever. But then also when they first start in the 1930s and the 1920s, there's like this rip from the headlines quality to them where they're like, they're really speaking to stuff that's happening right now, then and there. And then I think for me, it's a really interesting genre because it evolves that through that kind of way. And then when you have Carlito's Way, it's almost like a revisionist gangster movie. Sure, you had like Godfather's a revisionist gangster movie, Goodfellas a revisionist gangster movie, but there's something to the quality of this one where it feels like those 1930s ones, perhaps because it like New York looks like a set. Like it doesn't always look like New York. Sometimes it feels like a closed off set that you've seen in other movies or something. Like it could, you
kind of
looks
see like
him,
West Side Story sometimes.
Totally. Like you could see him walk past like Central Perk Cafe or whatever, you know? Like
it feels like it's in it. Yeah, you see, it's like there's something about its, it lives inside the genre. It's like it's as much about the genre as it is about the, it's hard to place what I, but yeah, I think the city is such a good example of that.
I think stylistically though, in saying that West Side Story thing, there is that element of like, if one of them had broken out into song at some point, it wouldn't have been out of, out of tune
I
completely.
I can't take my eyes off of you.
I apologize.
I apologize.
Do you know what I, do you know what other little thing I loved? This is, I don't even know why I loved it or why I'm saying this. Is the club that he buys into and a lot of the film is set in, A, some of the best fucking set design ever. I think it was my favourite set I've ever seen. That club is incredible.
Oh, so
great
good.
Club.
But it's located underneath the railway, like that sort of Brooklyn style.
Yeah.
And that's a thing I've seen in a lot of movies. I feel like that under the railway is such a trope of the of not just the genre but movies set in New York almost always have the because it's so cinematic, it's so beautiful. But there was something I loved that I almost don't see it as the underside of a train track. I see it as this like it as a genre trope or as a location or as like a mise-en-scène, you know. So then when he runs up and gets on the train it like fucked me up. I was like Yeah, like we're here not just because it looks cool, but because there's a scene at the end of the movie where he has to get on a train. Yeah. I just loved that for some reason.
Well, I think as well when you see him dying in the opening credits at a train station, when you see him all of a sudden enter the train station, it's that,
the tragedy emerges.
And the fact that it's been there the whole time, it's this isn't just putting a gun on a mantelpiece, it's like the gun has been there the whole time through the whole movie.
But you're still convinced it's going to work out okay. Like you're so convinced by Carlito.
Yeah, and you're hoping for it. You're like, even though you know it's, you're just like, come on now, like please, please. Like, and also everyone who got shot in this film at some point lived before they got shot again.
That's
everyone in this movie has two lives.
Yeah, honestly. And I know we talked about this when we did Miami Vice, but that kind of thing in action films, very, very big in the 80s, but like obviously well into the early 90s too, where when you're shooting at someone, you just shower bullets. There's no aim. It's just, I'm going to shower this place in bullets. Everyone gets out of it until someone gets shot in the chest and then they live. Like, I've just, it's so ridiculous to me. It's funny, but like, it's just that, like, I'm just going to shoot and like, it's just, I don't think in real life, if you wanted to kill somebody, you would just go and let loose in the fucking bar. That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
should we talk about The Man of the Hour?
Of course we should.
Because I think that John Leguizamo, this to me is my favourite performance of his. And I actually do think it's one of the roles that he's known for. I think it's like become a signature role.
Absolutely.
But also because I think that this film, and not unlike the other Al Pacino, Brian De Palma gangster movie, has lived on a lot in like hip-hop culture. And I think that there's something about the Benny Blanco character that is, I think it's really exciting. And part of it is because you only ever see this character through the eyes of Carlito, who is someone who was Benny Blanco. He was this like young gangster at one point in time, trying to like take over, trying to like have like to build somewhat of an empire.
Too big for his boots kind of deal, yeah.
And he, so it's obvious he sees so much of himself in there, but because of where Carlito is in his life, he can only see him with regret. And all he wants to do is to just go, this person can't exist in my world. So he just immediately tries to diminish him to his own demise eventually. But at every point along the way, it's like a complete denial of this guy.
Fuck, that's interesting. Because it's like that. You've just made me think. It's like he...
my purpose has been served.
How very dare you. It's like he can't get out of it, but he's not going to kind of... water the garden that is the new generation of people who could end up just like him. That is so interesting, Alexi!
And it's, I think the performance is fucking amazing because he's like, He's like this yappy little dog, yeah. Basically.
It's so good. And he's he is.
It's like he's dangerous. Like it feels it's a really dangerous performance.
And right from the start. Like right even the when start. There's that respect and that like you know that's like on a knife's edge right from the start.
It feels doomed. Like there's a lot of this movie, it's a tragedy that's like beautiful and romantic and sweet and dark. But then it's like there's that danger because you're like, well, it has to be a tragedy. I've seen that things aren't going to end out well for Carlito, or you think that they're not going to end out well for Carlito. And I think that first time you meet Benny Blanco, the John Leguizamo character, it's, I think, fascinating because he comes in feeling so much power. The power is immediately pulled away from him by Carlito. And then it's him trying to suck up and like love on Carlito, where it's like, okay, we're going to pay. And it's like, yeah, not to pay him, you got to pay the waiter, you fucking idiot, or whatever he's saying to that guy. Like, I love his performance in that moment because it's just like, oh, I've lost my power. Well, what can I do? I'm now a beta in a world where I've been an alpha for like the last 10 years or whatever.
So I'll be an alpha to as many people as I can be, but I'll show respect to the alpha.
I just think it's so dynamic and the way that it keeps changing and he keeps continually trying to impress him. And I think the second time we see him further down, where I think that's
the champagne scene where he tries to,
I actually think that's maybe some of Johnny Legg's best acting ever.
Do you know what I'll also say is, like, think about, put yourself in Johnny Legg's shoes in this moment, like how young he is. Like, to play a character full of fucking...
Yeah. Well, he'd only at this point been making movies for about 3 years. Previous to that, his, like, I mean, Miami Vice was his television debut and that was 1989. So this
and
was
they didn't
only
even have a jacket that could fit him.
Exactly. He was a little baby boy. And this was only 4 years later, presumably filmed 3 years after that. So he was very new.
This is, I mean, we've been talking a lot
of
about...
Wars before this, right?
1991 or two. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then Super Mario Brothers is 93.
93 as well.
Yeah.
But this was like...
So he's already a big Broadway star, right? Like he's been doing his one-man shows.
I think he's done one-man
show. He's done one. He did Mambo Mouth at this point, I think. I might have that wrong.
This is his, like, Baby I mean, Legs. He's credited with an introduced, introducing Johnny Legs. We've talked a lot about and John Leguizamo. This is introducing
Wait,
John Leguizamo.
Wait, in this movie, he's introducing.
That's what the credit is.
Whoa.
Now, he's done movies,
but he's being introduced to this.
This is his, like, this is his debutante ball.
Yeah.
You know? Well, this is, like, if you look at Casualties of War, it would be introducing Sean Penn. Probably, because, like, this is, like, because Michael J. Fox is in that movie and he's, like, an old hat. Sean Penn is massive in that film. He would be introducing. Yeah. John Leguizamo is one of three or four other men there who is also John C. Reilly, is in there somewhere. Yeah. Skinny John.
What a cast.
I actually think...
What a cast! That we could just... I wish we'd had you on for Casualties of War.
I don't know if I could have done it.
No, that was one of those ones where we had to talk about it beforehand because, like...
Well, we didn't know what it was about.
Yeah.
And that is a heavy...
Well, the title says a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, not quite.
Yeah.
I would actually, I'm going to reinterpret a word that you said, introducing. I actually think one thing about Casualty of War, reintroducing Sean Penn, because we know him as Spicoli.
Yeah.
And that's like people know him as Spicoli. Casualties of War is something else. And now I think this is like when this movie to me is like that next phase of his career where it's like, okay, now he's doing something different.
There was a line that was in the narration, because the narration was my favorite shit, where they. There was a shot. It was during the dancing scene when she was dancing with Al Pacino's mate or some guy, and he was like getting pissy about him dancing. And they described him as having bad drinker eyes.
Oh, wow.
And then they did a
Is
shot.
This Sean Penn?
The narration was like, I looked over and I could see that my friend, the lawyer, what's his name, David
Kleinfeld. David Kleinfeld.
I could see that Kleinfeld had bad drinker eyes. And there's a shot of Sean Penn, and it is just. He has bad drinker eyes.
Man, drunk is the hardest.
It's
kind of
so acting. Hard, but it was really good. It was like I went cold. I was like, and I've known some bad drinkers, and I was like, that's very good.
Yeah.
There was also
just a real sense, and I'll loop back around to Johnny Legs, the man of the hour.
Yeah.
But I want to talk
two
about
hours
Sean
by now,
Penn.
Sure.
Yeah. I want to talk about Sean Penn because there's also just like a real sense with that character of like. there's a, this genre has a lot of like the internal code or like, a, you know, we have this idea of right and wrong.
Yep. Honor among thieves.
Honor among thieves, yeah. To quote a movie that I was in the Australian release of. but this one really conveyed it with his character. This is someone who is a bad person.
Yeah.
Like who's a worm of a guy.
he's an absolute worm of a bloke. And it's like when they're, I love it where Carlito's like, you know, you're no longer a lawyer, you become a gangster.
Yeah.
And it's like that corruption and that greed from this guy. And I think it's just, it's such a wicked performance because it's crazy.
Yeah.
You watch it and go, who is this little character actor they found?
Yeah.
Oh, it's major leading man Sean Penn.
Yeah.
Who's and, got a perm and shaved his hairline down.
Could they make anyone look more like a worm while also looking like a perfectly realistic lawyer that would be, you know. But I thought Sean Penn was pretty fucking phenomenal in this movie.
I just want to loop back around to Johnny Leguizamo, the man of the hour, and just back to the idea of just like coming back to, could you imagine coming onto a set with Al Pacino, doing scenes with Al Pacino.
In a gangster film.
And Al Pacino in like a working with a director he knows kind of vibe. Like Al Pacino in his element and then having to play a character that thinks he's bigger than him and better than him. Like I would struggle so, you'd just be so like, oh, thank you so much. But he just fucking does.
John Leguizamo said that this was the film that he learned how to act in. Like, whoa, this is the one that made him. Yeah. He was like, I learned how to act in this film. He's like, I took more lessons from that film than I've in any other film. That's the one that taught me how to act, and I've taken that with me. I'll always thank Brian for that.
Wow. Can I ask you too, Mish, because this is your first time seeing this. This role, has it somewhat been hyped up to you as like being a key?
No, it was always like similar. Like I knew bits of this. Like I knew that it was, unfortunately, I knew that John Leguizamo's character killed Al Pacino. Mm-hmm. And I wish I didn't know that going in, but I'd seen the scene. Like in my journey of making this podcast, that had been like made apparent to me, and I kind of got an understanding of what this film was about. And obviously, people who like John Leguizamo love this film.
Mm.
There's very few people that when we say, "Oh, we do a podcast about John Leguizamo," who are like, "Oh, I love him."
Yep.
But people who love John love this movie,
and it's one of the ones that comes up when you show a photo of John. When you go, "I do a podcast about John Leguizamo," and people go, "Who?
Who does?"
And you show them a photo. One of the
Benny Blanco from the Bronx.
Mm. Yeah. Well, they usually just say, Carlito's way. But sometimes they say Benny Blanco.
And sometimes they might say Carlito Wells, but.
Yeah, Carlito's well. But no, it was definitely one that I was very excited to watch when we first started this pod fucking 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm really excited to get to Carlito's Way. And what a time it's been.
Yeah.
A lot's happened in my life in 3 years, and this is a highlight.
Wow. What do you see in that role? What do you think about it feels uniquely Leguizamo?
Well, firstly, the only being in like the first third of the film and then coming back at the end, John.
You get three check-in points.
Yep, three scenes. Mm-hmm. Three, that's Lincoln Lawyer, that's Miami Vice, that's heaps, there's so many.
What, it's a treat that he gets a scene per act. Usually it's two in the first act, one in the third.
Mm. Yeah.
That's usually the John Leguizamo.
But I would argue that this one had two in the first and his scene was the final of the first act. The one where they took him to the alley. That was the end of Act One.
Oh, I thought that was in Act Two.
Oh, well, whatever. That's how I kind of defined it. That's how I separated the film in my head.
You kind of see him, I guess because he is like a bit of a reflection for Carlito.
Mm. Yeah.
You see him at each point of change in Carlito's character.
Yes.
The first point where he's like, deny, got to get out of it. The second act when you meet him again, the alley sequence, the champagne sequence, where it begins as deny and then you see Carlito, who's been a character about self-preservation and survival, and like you hear him talking to like Gail going like, I've killed people, but every time I've done it, it's been to survive. It's never been like an assassination or anything like that. And this time where, you know, Pachanga, the Luis Guzman character, is like, kill him, it'll be fun, man, it'll be fun, like the old days or whatever. And you kind of get that sense of go, oh, maybe not every time he's killed someone, it's been in that moment where someone pulls a gun on you, you have to kill them straight away. Maybe it's not just self-defense, it has been self-preservation where it's like taking people out before they even have the chance to kill you. And then this moment is where he's like basically been promising Gail that he's like, he is actually
trying to make the effort to leave this life, but he can't because he's like, I owe this guy, I owe this, I need to do this, and he can't break free. And then this time, it's the time where he's like, okay, let him live. And it's like, what is his final comeuppance? It's like, he did let this guy live.
And it killed him.
He showed this guy mercy, but he's lived a life without mercy. You can't change that. If you're living in a world without mercy, how can you show it mercy? It's not going to show it back to you. Mm. Mercy, mercy, mercy. I said like 10 times.
No, but it's true. I mean, that's almost, I feel like that could be the like final, my final thought as well, is just jumping off that. And so, you're so right. It's that thing of the way he's a character that's always 10 steps ahead. Mm. And that's demonstrated time and time again. That you see, and that scene in particular, the narration explaining, I have to kill this guy.
Because otherwise I'll be known as someone who's, I'm weaker if I don't.
And I've never understood it so clearly, like this is something that I have to do. Mm. And then him choosing not to do it, it's something really cool this is a film, I think, about someone, about how circumstance... It makes you question whether we really make choices, particularly people in a situation like him, you know, someone who's an immigrant to the country, someone who's, whether you can really say he made any choices in his life, whether he really could have done anything else. And I think it shows it so well because you see him knowing and the way he knows when things happen, he knows. And then even when he has to get on the boat and he says, I have to get on the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been shown so many times
that he doesn't have to as well, but he has to.
But he has to, it's his code. It's the code. Yes, it's the code that ends up killing him, but it's also the code that kept him alive.
Yeah,
and they demonstrate it so clearly that it's this thing of usually those movies you see that as a choice that they're making and it's their own ego, but in this. I think there's just this, you're really challenged to think, like, does he actually have a choice at any point in this film? Mm. I really, really thought it was a very special film.
Oh, it's so good, man. So good.
Well, yeah, because finally when he did make a choice, hold on, let me think about how to phrase this sentence. Because when he finally did make a choice that was outside of the expectation of him or the life that he'd built, it's ended up being the thing that killed him.
Yeah.
It wasn't
getting on the boat that killed him. Getting on the boat was the right move because he could have killed the guys and gotten away. The thing that killed him was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And it just, I think that's a really profound, it just really is genuinely a very, I think great films are about empathy and it's a really empathetic film towards this character.
I have a final thought.
Yeah.
My final thought is John Leguizamo related.
Oh, I love that. That's really good for this
podcast. So we very, very loosely, at the start we tried to make it really, really stringent, but now it's incredibly loose. We loosely have John Leguizamo separated into three characters, three different stages of his film career, which is Baby Legs, Sexy Luigi, and Dad Guizamo, right? To me, this is Baby Legs, right? However, it is Baby Legs becoming an actor. Yeah. It's the best piece of acting I've seen Baby Legs do.
Whoa.
And that's very interesting because Baby Legs previously, him being in the experience of making the film and he's like big blazer boy, you know what I mean? Like he's in the experience of making the film, he's amongst it and he's sucking it all in. But in this one, it's like watching Baby Legs act. And I believe this is the end of Baby Legs.
This is the grand finale of Baby Legs before Sexy Luigi emerges and takes it into his Hollywood age.
100%. I think that this was the movie that definitely, for at least for me or for most John Leguizamo supporters, I'm assuming, solidified him as like a fucking force to be reckoned with cinematically.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah, dude, I spoke Alexi just that. Then.
Yeah. I got a chiver down my quiver.
And also one of my favorite lines, other than the he had bad drunk eyes or whatever, was you think that you're big time, but I'm gonna kill you big time. I liked that line.
It's great. It's a lot of great lines. Blood in my shoes. Blood in your shoes is incredible. Yeah.
Fever gonna kill you faster than a bullet. I love that line.
That's good.
Alexi, do you have any final thoughts before we move into our Leguistamos?
Oh, I just think that this is truly, it's one of my very, very favorite movies.
Yeah.
I think it is probably I think it's the best like later Pacino performance, post him returning in the 90s, coming back to cinema. So he makes it just after freaking Scent of a Woman. And I think that like this is,
I think it's so good. Like, I just love this characterization. And I actually can't imagine another actor being able to pull this kind of role off where he's so likable, so charismatic. And Pacino, he just moves so beautifully. Like, his physicality, the way he kind of floats around, like, scenes.
Like a dance.
Like, it's beautiful. He's like a dancer. Like, when he's in that there's this really tense sequence that's in the nightclub where he's, like, hiding from the Italian gangsters and, like, putting on a show. Every time he's putting on a show, this character, it's, like, just beauty incarnate, the way that he moves around. It's 100%. Just so stunning. But I'm with you guys. I think it's, like, just a top-tier Leguizamo performance. I actually think it's, like, I think of this as his signature role. When I think of John Leguizamo, I think of Benny Blanco, and I think that it is, it's a beautiful, young, hungry performance that he just executes perfectly.
Fuck, that's well put. Hungry is right. Like, you can see the hunger in him to do, to fucking smash Hollywood, and he's gonna do it.
And to be on, like, with probably, I'm assuming that Al Pacino must be one of his heroes. Like,
of course.
The way that he plays with him, it's just like, it's kind of magnificent to watch. But
play is such a good word as well. Yeah. It's a really, like, from Pacino, it's a really, and I love that you point out that it's his late career Pacino, because it's something that a young Pacino couldn't do, this performance. It's so playful.
It's soulful and it's so in a really different way. Yeah. I think he's a very soulful actor, but I think this is soulful in a very different way that I think that he must have had some relation to the books that it was based on. Yeah. So it's, I think that there's something about, like, him coming to find this role, you know, speaking to someone who has been, you know, the kind of face along with Robert De Niro, like the faces of this as a revisionist genre of gangster films, to come back and kind of make, you know, I often think of this movie in comparison to Clint Eastwood's version of that, which is like Unforgiven.
Yeah.
I think that there's something of these two movies coming out around the same time that are like speaking as a revisionist to like these movies that they were already doing, you know, the spaghetti Western versions of and stuff like that in the 70s and 60s, coming back and doing like the old man take on those is something really interesting. And now that, you know, that's an old man movie, this and Unforgiven, they're both still making old man movies.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Like, they made it now. Later. If they'd made it now, we would have had a scene with a de-aged Al Pacino before he goes to prison.
Yeah. I will say, though, I just realized then when you were speaking, how interesting for John Leguizamo then to do Righteous Kill with Al Pacino, because that's 20 years later. How far, and the amount of shit that he would have done since Carlito's Way before Righteous Kill, and just being like, hey, Al.
Hey, man.
Remember me.
Nice to see you.
Honestly,
Johnny Lang,
just sitting at the table. Do you think this is going to be a good one, Johnny?
So we got a lot of interesting people on here. Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's at the table with us today.
It's also, I could talk about this for hours. We should wrap this up. Yeah, but it's also just like how much a truly transcendent performance is about trust in the director.
Yeah.
Because like late Pacino is, he just gives and he gives. And if it's a bad director and a bad editor, I think they use the wrong takes. Yeah. And this is someone who is giving stuff to his director and saying, please give me a good performance in the edit. And he gets one.
Yeah.
I think it's a fearless. It's fearless.
100%. Oh,
God. I heard this quote about Pacino recently. I can't remember who it was attributed to. I think it was Christopher Nolan when they worked on Insomnia. And he was trying to get something out of Pacino. And Pacino was just like, don't worry, you're getting it. You'll see it in the dailies. And then he watched it. He's like, yeah, he's right.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's
don't worry, mate. It's there.
That's great. Do you want to give your Leguizamo, Zach?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to.
Just quickly, you know that this is based on how Leguizamo it is and not the film itself. Great.
well, you know,
of course,
what?
It's naturally known.
You know what? This might be one of those rare occurrences where the stars and the Leguizamos align.
Potentially.
Wow. Every now and then, stars will align.
Stars will align with Leguizamos. Mm-hmm. I can't give it anything else but 5.
Yeah.
It's so good, and it's more 5 than if he had more scenes.
Yeah,
like it's so good that he just takes his 3 scenes and so fucking Johnny runs with it. And I love what you said about that. It's the top of the baby legs. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. It's five Leguistamos for me, easy. Beautiful. Because if you're a true Leguizamarama listener, you will know my grading system is based on whether or not I can see someone else playing the role.
Mm.
Nah.
No.
I don't want anyone else to have it.
Yeah. So D.H. Pacino, that's it.
This is easily a five Leguistamo film for me. Mm-hmm. And we've only ever given out what do we give for Freak? It was like five Leguistamos, but it was a Leguizama Rama Rama or something like that.
I don't remember this, but sure, I'd love to do that again.
Well, when we watched Freak, which was his one man show that was then filmed and directed by Spike Lee.
It's my favorite comedy special.
We gave it five Leguistamos, but it was like the best you could possibly get, like whatever. I would be willing to take it to six Leguistamos if that's what that means. Because this to me, it was like, just like,
whoa, this is going to get six?
Well, we can't.
I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying it could.
It's a good kind of five.
Yeah, wow. It's like, it is like right up there for me in terms of Leguistamos. Because to me, it's just like the start of this beautiful career. And without Carlito's Way, perhaps Leguizamarama wouldn't exist.
Wow.
I'm just saying. Thank you so much.
Imagine if you just were like, two, fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah, three, one for each scene he's in. Not in that much, so I don't know. Not all right,
Alexi, I'd like to know your Leguistamo rating, Lexi.
Oh, it's five. It has to be five. Because I think it is his best performance. Like, he's a really great actor. And everything I've seen him in, I love him. Mm. I love him in. I think he's one of the, I think last time I came here, I said he was like one of the great ensemble actors where he can really work so well with everyone else. Mm. I think what's interesting about this performance in particular is like, yeah, he is part of the ensemble, but it is the Al Pacino show.
Mm.
But there's something about what he brings to this character where he brings, I think it's because he himself is, the dynamic is probably not unlike what the dynamic is actually between him and Al Pacino, where he is this hot young actor that is like really doing something quite exciting with his work and stuff. You know, his background is so interesting that he was like some kind of stand-up comedian in an esoteric way, and also like his one-man shows and stuff. There's something really hot and exciting about 1993 John Leguizamo potentially becoming a movie star. But I think because what he follows instead is not movie stardom, but like interesting character work. I think that Benny Blanco is potentially the first interesting character that he gets to play.
Mm-hmm.
And he does so marvelously.
Yeah.
And it's so hungry and so like ingrained and authentic, the kind of, because I think it's coming from that place because of that dynamic between him and Al Pacino.
Yeah.
It actually feels really authentic what he's doing here. Mm. Yeah. So dude, he's one of the best. And this movie is like the one that you go, this is why he's one of
the best. And it was so early in his career, but he was so ready for it.
Exactly.
It was the right time in his career. It was the right opportunity at the right time.
You're right, perfect.
Do you know what that means when there's five Leguistamos?
I've never been present for five Leguistamos because I did do a Mario episode.
That means that it's a Leguizamarama. Hey!
What are the other five? So the freak?
Freak was a five.
I think Mario was a five.
Wow, okay.
Oh, no, maybe it wasn't.
Latin History for Morons. Mario wasn't a five. Latin History for Morons was definitely a five.
But his one-man shows almost get an automatic five. Yeah, of course. Whatever they
what
are.
What else can they be?
Yeah, like they can't be anything else.
Absolutely.
What about the Papa John's commercials?
No,
he didn't appear. Did Mr. Vegetable get a Leguizamarama?
I feel like it should. His role on Sesame Street.
Okay.
He played Captain Vegetable.
Yeah.
Where he like came on in like a suit and told the kids to eat vegetables.
It definitely should have. There's been quite a few. I think Violent Night was a Violent Night. Yeah, was.
I liked him in that. Yeah, I thought that was a very good
and
movie.
That was special to see him get the Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
You know, it's
special to see him around Christmas time.
Yeah. And Romeo and Juliet was obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's one thing when I was reading about him again the last couple of days for this was he did a show that was like that, that like Trace Back Your Roots kind of thing.
We watched that. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. I want to see that.
That was a Leguizamarama as well.
Was it?
Yeah. The Trace Back His Roots one. Mm. Yeah. Because it was just about his life.
Yeah.
Like, of course.
Yeah.
Alexi, is there anything you want to promote where people can see you? How can they find you?
Absolutely. I've got a podcast. Once again, I've re-entered the realm of podcasting. Cameron James and I have got a new podcast called Special Features, where we talk all things culture, pop culture, the past, present, and future of culture and pop culture every single freaking week.
Fuck yeah.
And the first episode we did was basically my favorite movie of 2023 so far. So if you're looking for new movies, you're feeling like you want to find out what's really good, I just kind of talked about the first batch of movies for the year that really really meant a lot to me. So
awesome.
Check them out.
Alexi, thank you so much. You are a dear friend of the podcast.
Wow, thank you. And hopefully a dear friend behind the podcast too.
Absolutely, yeah. And I just want to say also, thank you for, I guess in a way, we were always going to watch this film, but sharing this film with us, it's really very special. I was not expecting this to be such a special film.
Absolutely.
So I really enjoyed it.
And also
really
your presence here and in the discussion of this film has turned this podcast, if only for an episode, into an actual film review podcast.
Wow.
Because never once have we done this.
Wow.
And I feel like our regular listeners who aren't on board for the film review part of our podcast are just like, the fuck of Mission
Come Zach? To the water.
We'll be back
it's
next
time
week.
To drink. Yeah. They're ready. They're thirsty.
But also, we'll be back next week talking about bullshit. Thank you so much, Alexi. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And to Tom, can you please take us away with...
the outro music, Tom. The theme tune of this podcast.
All right, that's fine. You get a week off.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.